And it's Steve Tasker who has been all over the field.
Kind of unique. He was kind of a dual role player for you.
Steve.
A balloon.
Steve. A blimp. We're not even in the stratosphere of normalcy. All right, let's go. It's Friday, everybody. One Bills Live is the show. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you. And
we got to bring the energy better today. Yesterday, we kind of like...
We were ho-humming it. I think we were dramatically affected by the humidity.
I think so, too. And we started out at a not even a brisk walking pace. We were absolutely strolling when we started the show yesterday. Yeah. Not today, though.
No.
Yeah. See the game last night? Basketball
I missed game six.
I know you
I don't know what I was doing. I was like doing all this different stuff. I got home late. I did the corporate challenge yesterday with several of our compadres.
Go ahead and brag.
Not only
our boy
here.
Brownie.
I'm not bragging.
Three and a half miles in under 30 minutes.
I was happy to get under 30. I have my friend Justin to thank.
You were in the top 10% of finishers.
He was my I thanked him right after the race. I said, you were my rabbit, man. I wouldn't have got under 30 if he wasn't pushing me.
Yeah.
Because I was struggling. That last mile was not fun. Have you ever done the corporate challenge?
I was the ceremonial starter one year.
So no, you have not run. You have not run it.
No.
So the worst part is
you've got to run. So
basically, you come down.
Disqualifies me.
Yeah. Basically, you're at the north end of Delaware Park.
Right.
You come down Nottingham. You hang a left down through the S curves on Delaware.
Right.
You go to the first circle there, Gate Circle.
Right.
You double back and run it back.
See, I have run Turkey Trot, so that's kind of in the same neighborhood.
Yeah.
Not quite.
So the worst part is you hit mile three, and it's that slow climb up
slow
the
death.
Skajakwita Overpass, under the Skajakwita Overpass, up to Nottingham, and you hang that right again, and it's all like this steady climb, and you're trying to make time. And it's just that's where we were going at a nice clip.
There's a ton of people.
Yeah, 5,800 I think they said runners.
Wow, way to go! Way to go!
I think I don't know if it was 5,800 It was 5,800 registered. I don't know if 5,800 ran because we had that big weather threat yesterday.
Which
there was like severe thunderstorms, possible tornado, and so I got to the park and the wind was still kicking up. I was like, oh man, something's coming through.
Right.
But fortunately, all the wind was out of the south, and we could see it.
Yeah,
there was a line of stuff, but it got pushed north of us. Thankfully, not for the people in Niagara County, I'm sure, but we avoided it thankfully because we could have got. But dude, you could have wrung out my shirt like a dish rag
when
I was done. It was disgusting.
Yeah,
it was so humid, and I would imagine it impacted a lot of people in terms of they probably didn't run as fast as they wanted to because I'm telling you, man. It is so true. It is not the heat. It's the humidity.
Yeah.
It really is.
Oh, yeah.
It just saps
so
much energy out of you.
It's down in the south, down south here in Buffalo and south of it where we are. We were kind of bracing for it, putting stuff away. Because you start saying tornado, believe me, I'm from Kansas. I know.
Yes, you don't mess around with that
stuff.
You take
a few logical and reasonable actions to make sure that your belongings aren't all over the neighborhood. So we did that, and it was for nothing because it turned out to be a spectacularly beautiful evening where we were at. So that was nice.
Yeah.
Proud of you, though. Way to go, man. Corporate challenge.
Yeah, I haven't run probably a 5K or a 10K since pre-pandemic.
Yeah.
Because we have one in Lancaster every July 4th.
Do you run regularly?
I've done less of it, but yes, I would say I run 2 to 3 times a week, but no more than 2 to 3 miles at any one clip.
I run 2 to 3 times a decade.
Well, yeah, but if you add up all the running you did in your 13-year NFL playing career, it probably adds up to...
I got to say, it was strange when I retired, because I was a junkie. I was in here all the time. I lived here at the stadium. We stayed here in the off season. It was all the free equipment, and the coaches were here, and I'd come in. I was here all the time. The day I retired, I had, and I still have, absolutely zero appetite for any kind of
Well, when you do it every single day for 13 years, I could understand how it gets a little old.
Well, I did it before that. I did it for like
well,
5 years.
Well, yeah, not to mention
college
your college
too.
Career,
yeah.
Your
college
high school career.
College is where career. I got into it. But I am like totally, it's off my, totally off my radar, off my list of desires that I want to do.
I mean, by no means was
it's kinda creepy.
Was I of the athletic prowess of you, but I mean, I played three sports in high school. I was fortunate enough to play Division III soccer in college. And when I finished, I was good. I was like, I'm good.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, I'm totally with you.
I don't need to chase it anymore. I got to do what I wanted to do. I'm happy. Now I got to start working.
Right. Got to get a job. You're in a beer league, right?
No, I played soccer, you know, at a club level till I was probably about 35, and then I played for a little while in an over 35 league until I was about 45-ish.
So you did it all the
yeah,
way
did
till
it
you
for
were
a while.
You did it done until
but
recently.
But I got smart. I was playing on smaller fields, fewer players,
yeah, right.
Less running.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know,
I won't do it. I just won't do it. I got to, yeah. It's going to cost me at some point. I mean, I'm going to, like, you know, a widow maker or something's going to happen.
But I'm
done.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Not with all that yard work you've been doing. You know?
Oh, gosh. I was splitting wood last night.
I told you, man.
With an axe. I got a wedge thing with a swing in it.
There's something satisfying about splitting wood, though,
yeah,
isn't there?
Yes.
Like, there's something.
I was doing that.
Innerly masculine about.
I am over the counter pain med boy today.
Oh.
Yeah.
So you were swinging it maybe a little longer than you should have.
Yeah. I hurt from my fingertips to the tips of my toes.
Well, you're just sore.
Yeah,
you're just
exactly.
sore. That's
not that big.
You don't have an injury.
And plus, I'm like you. I was. Oh my gosh, the humidity is just.
I'm telling you,
it's horrible.
So you know, like those two, you know, you get your regular sized water bottle. It's about 16, 17 ounces.
Right.
I easily sweat at least two bottles worth of stuff just running. In that race yesterday,
yeah,
I put two back in me, and I was still thirsty.
Yeah.
Like, it was just,
yeah.
I haven't sweat like that
it's
in
nice,
a long
though.
Time.
I was really shocked because I had no idea what the corporate challenge was or anything like that, and I went up there. They said, hey, would you like to be the starter for the corporate challenge?
Yeah.
I was like, yeah. I was thinking, you know, like a couple hundred people there or whatever, a little fun run. I get show up, at, you know, there's like 500 runners or 5,000 runners, 6,000 runners, and there's like 5,000 people just hanging out.
Yeah.
Like in the tents.
Oh, I'm.
And the camp, is there still the encampment there where they pop up the tents and everything?
They have all the tents, yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
In Delaware Park there.
How did I miss this?
I'm going to say this.
It's a huge event.
I'm not going to name names, but there were some school districts that were there.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the Union Free School Districts, whatever.
Last day of school?
You know, school is just about done.
So I
get there early because I don't want to mess with the parking. It's such a nightmare. So I get a good spot on Jewett Parkway. I walk into the park. So I'm walking. I'm making my way over to where our tent location is, you know, our one Buffalo tent. And I have to pass a lot of the other tents before I get there. We're on the back side. So I'm walking. I get in the park, and I'm hearing.
Right.
Like, somebody's got the wheels
yeah,
of steel
right.
turning already.
Here we go.
And I'm like, who the heck is that? They're like, this is pre-race. This is like 2.5 hours before the 2 hours before the race. And there's a couple of school districts. They each have like 150 people already on site, and it is on like Donkey Kong. I'm like, yep, end of the school year is coming. I mean, it's here.
Oh, man, bless their heart.
It was alive and well
it.
In Delaware Park
Good
2 hours
them.
Before race time. I would venture to guess a lot of their runners became walkers.
Yeah.
By 6:30.
Or pukers.
Because they were going out.
Walkers and pukers.
Hard.
Yeah, that's, yeah. I get it, though, man. That's, oof. That's
got to be a nice thing, you know?
Yeah.
And look, I got all the, my wife's whole family are teachers. My sister's a special ed teacher. I got all the respect in the world for teachers. But,
I
man,
do
they love it when that summer vacation
when
rolls around,
final bell rings.
They are ready to rip the Band-Aid off and go.
Yeah, well,
they were primed.
Yeah. Well, congratulations to all the people in Buffalo who had something to do with that last night. I hope it was a success.
I think they were just happy to get the race off in light of all those threats of weather.
I'm sure they
were.
And
the starter was Mayor Brown. He was there.
Oh, good.
Firing the air horn.
Good deal.
I was trying to. He couldn't hear me. I was yelling like, "Oh, you know, do the DJ horn, like, frah, 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 frah. Like yeah. That's if somebody ever gives me an air horn to do something with, like ceremonial or whatever, I'm going with that.
Yeah,
that's going to be my play.
Frah, frah,
not just, just like jazz it up a little bit, man. Yeah. You know, frah, 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 frah. That would be good.
Yeah.
let's get to some NFL news and notes. And teams around the league are getting fined, Steve. They're getting fined for illegal practice activities. As we know, there is supposed to be no physical contact through OTAs and mandatory minicamp. So far, the Chicago Bears earlier this offseason got dinged. Head coach Matt Eberflus docked for a practice for violation of non-contact rules. Then you had the Dallas Cowboys organized team activities got a little too physical. Second year in a row, by the way, for them.
Yeah.
So they got fined. So did head coach Mike McCarthy, and they got docked to practice. And then Washington Commanders got too physical at their practices. Head coach Ron Rivera fined $100,000. Team lost two OTA practices because of too much contact. And then still more punishment. Texans head coach Lovie Smith fined $50,000 due to running prohibited one-on-one O-line D-line drills. So, and I'm telling you, it's no joke. Not all, and people say, "Oh, why would a player like snitch on his own team?" Sometimes that happens. Sometimes they file a grievance and it gets reported to the PA. They go to the league, and then punishment is handed down, as we've listed here. But I do know this because this person was at Bill's mandatory minicamp practice on Tuesday. The NFLPA will send representatives to the 32-team practices to monitor and overlook it. Like, is this on the up and up? Is this on the level? Are they following all the protocols and guidelines as specified in the CBA agreement? And if not, they're going to
get
pinched.
Fined. Yeah, and that's what the Bills had their guy here. I can't remember who it was, but that the NFLPA had a guy on side watching, and it just makes no sense to do it. You're not getting – it's. Let's remind ourselves, it's June. You're going to have training camp in, like, a month. Just, you know, you just abide by the rules. I don't know what they think they're gaining or whether they – or whether the guys I don't know. Why would they do that? Knowing that they're going to get caught. They've done it with Dallas. It's like a yearly thing. This is like the second year in a row. It's $100,000, and they lost a practice in next year's OTAs. They can't have one of their OTAs because of this infraction. So it's not nothing, and I know this too. It's every club's different, as I've said it before. They're all kind of the same, but they're all really different, and it comes down to what your owner is willing to stomach as far as what you're allowed to do.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean the protocols are there, or the rules are there for a reason. They were collectively bargained. So as much as you want to get your team ready, you got all training camp to do that.
Yeah.
So you got to adjust. And some of these coaches are having a hard time with it. The one that I was surprised by the most was Matt Eberflus. You know, some of these older coaches that were used to the way things were done prior to the last two CBAs, you know, Ron Rivera's been around that long. McCarthy's been around that long. Lovie Smith's been around that long. So you're like, okay, like maybe you could see them screwing up once, maybe not twice, Mike McCarthy, in consecutive years. But the newer coaches, like Matt Eberflus, that surprised me a little bit. I maybe it's because he's a new head coach. I don't know. But it was just, it's weird to see it. Like the first time it happens, punishments get handed down. The rest of the league takes notice and says, oh, we better watch our P's and Q's. And then you got – then it happens again and again. And it's like, what are you guys doing? I don't get it.
Yeah.
But anyway, so that's that. We are also keeping a peek and an eye on the Deshaun Watson stuff. And the latest coming down from this now centers around a Pro Football Talk report by Mike Florio, who is taking a completely different angle on this. He's taking a look at the league office on Park Avenue and what is going on there as more and more reports come out that there are going to be more and more lawsuits. And it came out this week that two more lawsuits are going to be filed against Deshaun Watson to bring the total of civil suits to 26. And so he decided to do a little digging around the NFL office on Park Avenue in New York City. And as the cases continue to churn out against Watson, Florio cites a source close to the situation at the league office that says the league is very concerned about the drip, drip, drip of more cases being filed against Watson. Since the March trade that sent Watson to the Browns, you've got 24 lawsuits now, soon to be 26. So the additional cases only complicate whatever penalty the NFL ultimately chooses to hand down. Florio is reporting that some in the league office want Watson sidelined until the litigation has completely ended. So with no end to the situation in sight, ruling out a Browns reunion with Baker Mayfield is now being speculated. I still don't see that happening. I think Baker Mayfield says, go jump in Lake Erie. I'm not playing for you guys ever again.
Right.
But if the league chooses that, if the league chooses that direction, Steve, we know none of these civil cases are being heard until like March 2023. And to get through 26 civil cases, now you're talking probably into 2025. You know how slow the justice system moves. 26 cases? I mean, it's going to take years.
Yes. Here's the thing. I have said that the league has always been hesitant to, because what makes sense to me, Brown, if this was one of those things, is just like, listen, let's suspend him indefinitely until we decide it's time to, okay, well, now we'll talk to you about coming back and playing. The problem with that is, and as we've seen, I mean, this doesn't seem to me to be like that, but what they're afraid of is some person just coming up with some accusation and them having to do the same thing to a person who isn't guilty or we don't think is guilty, whatever.
Yeah.
It was just made up. So they're very hesitant to throw a blanket policy over something like this, as egregious as this is and as obvious as it seems to be. Just that guy needs to step away from the game for a while and get it together, and then we'll talk about it later after it's all said and done. The league's hesitant to do that because they've seen too many times where the allegations were baseless.
Right.
Hard to believe that here, but nevertheless, you got to think about what it means to the league if they do that going forward. Somebody, you know, the guy I played with, Jim Kelly, had to put up with stuff like this all the time.
Yeah.
You know, crackpots who were trying to get his money. That's what the league is afraid of. This doesn't seem like that, but you got to.
Right.
But they've got to treat it with the knowledge that they're probably, this isn't the last time it's going to happen.
Well, yeah, but I think the ultimate concern on the part of the league is optics. You know, right. You're trying to portray yourself as a progressive league, advancing the careers of women in what has been predominantly a male career field. You know, whether it's coaching, front office, you know, in front of the camera, whatever it is. The league is trying to be progressive in this regard. You know, not to look good. I think they're genuinely trying to do what they feel is the right thing going forward in terms of where our society is at this day and age. And that's all to be applauded. But this is a fly in the ointment, I mean, to say the least, because you have a prominent player at a prominent position accused of very, very unsavory things. And while you let the justice system handle itself and it's innocent until proven guilty, you want to get this right. You have to get this right as a league, and all of this stuff, I think, only makes it more complicated to get it right as a league.
I don't know that it is the optics or what they're thinking about. I think because if the optics is all they want to do it, they would have suspended him a year ago and said, come back when it's said and done.
There's union stuff involved here, too.
That way, then they could flush the whole thing away, wouldn't have to deal with it until 2025 or whatever the longest thing is. So the problem is, what are they able to get away with? But you're right. It's not going away. Not obviously for a while.
So essentially, the Texans paid him to not play. He was not interested in playing for the Texans either, but they basically paid him, and he sat and watched for a year. And now the Browns could very well be paying him. And if the league ultimately decides to suspend him indefinitely until his legal stuff is resolved in full, he could be waiting a long time. Now, we don't know that that's going to happen, but it has been suggested here in the report from Pro Football Talk's Mike Florio. Whether it gets to that point, we're just going to have to wait and see. But this is just another angle of this whole situation and how this is not an easy one.
No, it's not.
For the league to kind of stick the landing.
Complicated for the league, complicated for, obviously, for Deshaun. It's obviously tragic and horrible for the victims. It's a pain and embarrassing or infuriating for Baker Mayfield. The Browns, it's almost like they're you know, beating themselves up by getting into this thing the way they have, just wading into it and throwing $236 million, what right now seems to be into the toilet. Deshaun Watson leaving the Houston Texans, the Texans washing their hands of the whole thing, paying him not to play.
Yeah, how much are they wiping their brow
and
now?
For a guy that they had ostensibly lied to begin with, and that's how they soured their relationship with him. So he wants out. I mean, there's like layer after layer after layer, and not a single bit of it has any redeeming value. It is so awful.
And we should not forget that the Texans were implicated basically as enabling Watson by giving him membership to an exclusive hotel in Houston, which he sometimes would use a certain suite at that hotel for massage appointments. And they also provided him with a non-disclosure agreement when he first brought up to them that he was being accused of certain things by massage therapists. And they said, well, this can protect you if you can have them sign it prior to your massage appointment. So at the very least, they've been accused as enablers in the New York Times story by Jenny Vrentis, which came out last week.
Right.
So the Texans aren't out of the woods yet either. And again, we sit and wait for this to be resolved, but I think we're going to be sitting and waiting a long time. Let's end NFL news and notes on a good note. Marv Levy, the Bills Hall of Fame head coach, is poised to join a very select pro football group. Tonight, he is going to be inducted into the Canadian Football Hall of Fame. For those that don't know, he was the former Montreal Alouettes head coach, won a Grey Cup up there. He's going to become, Steve, just the third person to be both an inductee of the Canadian and the Pro Football Hall of Fame. He joins former Minnesota Vikings head coach Bud Grant, quarterback Warren Moon. That's the list.
Yeah.
That's it.
Three guys in both leagues Hall of Fame. We were going to head up to Hamilton.
Yeah, because that's
tonight.
Where it's taking place, Hamilton.
It's happening tonight. Congratulations, Marv. But we found out, I reached out to Marv. He's not coming.
Yeah, he is not.
He doesn't travel these days. Not that he's in poor health. Not that he's in poor health. It just doesn't. I've emailed with him, and he seems to be as sharp as ever. But his doctor said, you know what? No, you just stay in Chicago. So he made a video for the people in Hamilton on his induction. We were actually going to go up and see if we could cross paths with him, but it didn't. It fell through, so we're not going to go. But congratulations to Marv. What a guy. That is awesome. And he coached in Montreal for 5 years and won 2 Grey Cups in his 5 years there. So congratulations to Marv. It's great to see. Marv deserves to be in every Hall of Fame there is.
We say it with a smirk, but there's some legitimacy to it. The guy's an American treasure. So, yeah. So congrats to him on that. And I was struck by this, Steve, because I thought I knew Marv's coaching career pretty well. You know, I'm not going to pretend to know it inside and out, but I knew he coached under
George
Allen with the Washington Redskins, but I forgot that he was coaching there as a special teams coach when they went to the Super Bowl, but they lost to the undefeated Dolphins team. And the very next year, he left to be the head coach of the Montreal Alouettes.
Mm-hmm.
And he kind of turned their program around, was coach of the year up there in 1974. That was the year he won the Grey Cup for Montreal in a win over Edmonton. And he did remember coaching against Bud Grant when he was coaching up in Winnipeg.
Mm-hmm.
So Bud Grant, Warren Moon, Marv Levy, the only inductees of both the Canadian Football Hall of Fame and the Pro Football Hall of Fame in Canton. So very, very, very select company. So congrats to him on that. That's a pretty cool thing when you're when you're on a list of three people. I mean, there are exclusive lists out there. That's a pretty short one. You know what I mean? Like, that's pretty special.
Yeah, awesome. Yeah, it is. Are you kidding me? And there's a lot of really great players that have played in both leagues. And, you know, not all of them have been recognized the way Marv has. And Bud Grant, of course, I grew up watching the Vikings. And Warren was a teammate of mine, Warren Moon. So,
right.
And on a couple of occasions, I played with him with the Houston Oilers. I played against him as a Buffalo Bill. And he was the quarterback, of course, of the comeback game and all the games we had with them during those years. And then I was also his teammate once again in the Pro Bowl a couple of times. So, yeah, congratulations to Warren, Bud Grant. It's a nice little tidy list right there. Warren Moon, Bud Grant, Marv Levy.
I mean, and Marv is not one to talk about himself very much ever anyway, but man, that's a list that maybe you throw that up on your tombstone at the end. You know what I mean? Come on now. That's epitaph worthy, isn't it?
Yeah, but
as your career is concerned.
Yeah, but here's Marv's 96. And if you've ever spent some time with him, as I have, you know, occasion.
Yeah. He doesn't care.
He cares. He's very important to him. He's very gracious about it. That's like one of a gazillion stories guy's got of
World War II vet.
He was at the game, the last World Series game in 1936.
Oh,
when the Cubs won it before they won it this time.
No.
This last time.
No, that's not right. He was
whatever it was.
The last time, I think it was the last time they were in the World Series.
That's right.
Which was 1932. And they lost to the Yankees that year.
Whatever that was, he was there.
Yeah, the last time they were in the World Series. I believe
he's
that's
got,
the way it is.
He's got stories, and he drops me. And one of his buddies in Chicago is Ryan Sandberg, the old Chicago Cub. The guy's an icon.
Yeah.
And the stories he kept in the chronicle of his life, and he'll throw down stories about Harry Carey, the old Chicago Cubs announcer, and all these other – I wish I could remember all the names I've heard him drop at one point. I was like, it's like, wait, what? Franklin Delano Roosevelt? What? I'm teasing. That's not what he said. But it's one of those kind of things. It's like, what? And so, yeah, going into the Pro Football Hall of Fame and the Canadian Football Hall of Fame, along with only two other people to do both of those Hall of Fames, yes, it is absolutely unbelievable. But one of the reasons Marv is so spectacular and deserves to be in the Human Being Hall of Fame. When you sit and talk with him, his life has been epic.
Yeah.
An absolute epic journey. And it's been a long one.
Talk about making the most of your 96 years. There's a lot crammed in there for him, man.
It's unbelievable.
It's crazy.
It's unbelievable.
Pretty crazy. We want to remind you that the OBL Friday Fan Mailbag is open. Any questions on the Bills or the NFL at large, fire them off either on the tweet sheet at One Bills Live, or you can give us a call, 803-0550 in the 716 area code, or toll-free 1-888-4-BILLS. 550-2550. Got open lines for you. We will take a break here, but when we return, we will be joined by our colleague Maddie Glab, who took in mandatory minicamp, reported on it on BuffaloBills.com as well. She joins us for her impressions of minicamp and maybe a little advanced report on what to look for in training camp just 6 or so weeks away. She's coming up next here on One Bills Live, presented by Kalata Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. Welcome back to One Bills Live. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you, joined now by Bills reporter Maddie Glab, who took in all of mandatory minicamp while we were stuck in here doing the show. We couldn't watch as much practice as you could, Maddie. So that's why we've got you in, to kind of be our eyes and ears for some of the stuff that went down. What would you say was, I don't know, maybe the most eye-opening thing for you in the 2 days that you watched out there with these guys going at it?
I'm trying to think of OTAs as well, mini camp, since I was a part of those practices and mini camp. So trying to think big picture here. And it's always tough to, you know, put your finger on one thing, especially in OTAs and mini camp, when the coaches say they're not really doing football yet. And that is totally true, because the pads aren't on yet. They're not popping yet. They're not tackling yet. So what you're really seeing is like a glorified walkthrough every day with some team periods built in there. But I think the thing that stood out most for me, and this may not be a shock to anybody because it shouldn't be, is the fact that the Bills are picking up where they left off. I mean, this looks like a well-oiled machine and team out on the field. It doesn't look like there's a big learning curve for this group. It doesn't look like there's a lot of new guys on the field. Of course, we brought in rookies and free agents who are learning the offense and who are learning the defense, and we have loads of new coaches as well. But from the outside looking in, when practice is going on, you don't really notice that.
Right. They seem like they...
It's always been a tight operation under McDermott,
truthfully. I think it's interesting, too, because I was saying one of the things that they do here a lot, and I was talking to the guys before the show earlier, this club, you know, everybody has new players on their roster every year. Some, you know, as many as 10, 12, 14, whatever. But this club seems to churn their roster deeper and be willing to do that more than other clubs. Like, you look back at the free agents they brought in who were real contributors, John Feliciano, Quentin Spain, Darrell Williams, Jordan Phillips, all of these guys they've brought in over the course of the last 3 or 4 years turned out to be very big contributors on the defense or the offense. Josh Norman took some reps. Mm-hmm. You know, all these guys, they have guys that they bring in the offseason who really play for this team and are on 1 year deals.
Yeah.
And then now they're gone. They're willing to do that, and I think it's a testament to how Sean McDermott can integrate these guys together. And you saw it out there in minicamp. You said, to me, having that many new players and all the guys that are going to be contributors, O.J. Howard this year, you know, Jamison Crowder this year, they're just like, they'll be part of the team. We'll get them in here. That's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. And Jamison and OJ Howard and Jamison Crowder, they've had nice OTAs in minicamp. Again, it's hard to like judge guys off of just OTAs and minicamp, so I don't want to, you know, say too much, but OJ Howard is going to be a good player if he can stay healthy. Jamison Crowder has proven that he can really help an offense out, and I think he could be a sneaky good asset for this team alongside, of course, we know what Isaiah McKenzie can do, but we know how important that slot position was to Josh Allen in his first few seasons as an NFL quarterback. Cole Beasley was his security blanket a lot of the times, and I think Isaiah McKenzie and Jamison Crowder can be that again as Josh Allen enters year 5. OJ Howard is a huge tight end.
Right.
Dawson Knox said in his media availability that he makes me look small, and it's so true. It's like this kid is a freak athlete in the way that he looks, and to think about him within the offense, we've talked about it before, you know, 12 personnel could be a normal thing this season because of the guys that they have. It's been fun to see Von Miller out there coaching up the younger players. They talk about his moves, what he can offer. I talked to Deion Dawkins yesterday as we were on a shoot, and people were asking him about what Von Miller brings to the table, and to hear another NFL player talk about the way that they talk about Von Miller is something special to witness, because Deion Dawkins went into detail about the moves that he has, what he can do with his body, how he can bend, how he can move. And for a starting left tackle in the NFL to almost be like awestruck by what he's seeing on the practice field, I think says a lot. And we've been able to see that in a sample size. I'm really excited to watch that once training camp happens and once the pads come on. So those have been a couple things that I've noticed. Tavon Austin has had a couple good passes. I know Josh Allen said in the beginning of OTAs, you know, what I want to work on is our yak and throwing our guys open. Yep. And we've seen several examples of that throughout OTAs and mandatory mini camp already. So it's been fun to watch. Ken Dorsey, Joe Brady, and Josh Allen seem like they're getting on the same page together, right? We've heard Josh Allen talk a lot about just hearing a new voice in the headset and wanting to kind of get comfortable with that in mandatory mini camp so they can kind of hit the ground running in training camp. And Sean McDermott said, we feel light years ahead with Ken Dorsey as our offensive coordinator because he knows the terminology. He knows the jargon. He knows what works in this offense. So I think you're seeing a team out there that, like I said, is just picking up where it left off because there's so much familiarity in a lot of different ways.
We saw on the practice field seemed to indicate this, but Isaiah McKenzie essentially confirmed it. His role is going to be bigger in this offense this year. He said it. And I don't see that changing between now and the start of the season. It's going to be interesting to see how they choose to deploy him and Jamison Crowder, whether it's going to be an either or, whether it's going to be at the same time, whether it's going to be at the expense of the tight ends at times based on the opponent and, you know, what they feel is going to work in a given week. I don't know who McKenzie's advocate is, whether it's Josh, whether it's Ken Dorsey, whether it's Sean McDermott or somebody else on the team, but a guy that found it hard to find a larger role on the offensive side of the ball the last couple of years suddenly looks like he's going to have a bigger one here in 2022.
And I think he deserves that opportunity. And I think the coaching staff also understands that. I mean, he's came up clutch in several different ways. Of course, when it came to returning the football, sometimes didn't come up as clutch in certain scenarios and things. And that's another battle that we're going to be talking about all offseason is who's going to be their punt returner and kick returner. We've seen several different guys take some reps at that position, but it remains to be determined. But Isaiah McKenzie has shown up in more ways than one and has been that viable option for Josh in the offense last season, especially toward the end of last season. And we heard from Isaiah McKenzie last week or a couple days ago. I'm getting all my days confused now, a couple days ago. And he said, I want to be on the same level with Josh as Cole Beasley was and kind of looked up to Cole Beasley in that way with their chemistry and the communication. So Isaiah McKenzie said, I want to use mini camp and training camp to form that relationship with my quarterback, to be in a place where I feel comfortable like Cole Beasley did. But it'll be interesting, like you said, Brownie. I mean, Jamison Crowder, Isaiah McKenzie, they offer a lot of the same things on the field. They do have different strengths in certain ways, but is that going to be a battle? What is that going to look like in season? Are we going to keep, you know, you play the numbers game. We can't keep all of the wide receivers that we have on this roster.
Yeah.
We have a lot of talent on this roster, but once we get into training camp, you kind of start to do the, okay, are we going to keep 10 guys at this position? Are we going to keep five? What is it going to look like? We have 12 cornerbacks right now. That is a crazy big number.
And there's at least four of them that can really play, and maybe more than that. And if that's
probably
the case,
more.
You know, how do you get your mind around it? You're right, though. One of the things that Brownie and I had a conversation with on the practice field, Isaiah McKenzie, and you mentioned it, when he's gotten a chance, man, he's hit home runs. Week 17 in 2020, last year in the New England game. There's been a couple of times when they've asked him to be a bigger part of the offense, and he has absolutely crushed it. And it's Brownie and I were thinking, like, well, okay, why is that all we've seen? Because usually when a guy comes out and plays like that,
they get
like
more
the
reps.
Next week they're trying to do the exact same thing, right? So was that Brian Daboll saying, nah, I don't know if I've got this other thing I want to do. Yeah, he's good, but we, you know, it was because we called his number. Is it Sean McDermott saying, yeah, well, I like these other guys better, whatever? Is it Josh Allen saying, when he's on the field, I'm throwing him the football no matter what? Which happens with big, with good quarterbacks. They just said, I like this guy. I want him to be more involved, so I'm going to throw him the football and show him. That kind of stuff happens. And Brownie and I were having this thing. I wonder where the disconnect is. Mm-hmm. Is it with Brian Daboll and the offense? Is it with Sean McDermott and Brian Daboll? Was it with Isaiah McKenzie and Josh, or Josh and Brian Daboll, or Josh and Sean McDermott? I mean,
well, either way, the conversation's changed.
Yeah.
Finally.
Why is that? And now, and the only thing that's changed is Brian Daboll's now in the New York Giants, and Ken Dorsey's calling the plays. Maybe he's the one who said, you know what, I think you're not using this guy enough. Let's see if we can do it. I think that's really interesting, mm-hmm. and it'll be fun to watch training camp coming up and see how it transpires.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And I think in ways we've seen – different guys on the offense have years, right? Stephon Diggs, of course, his first season on this team had a year. But then year two comes around, and defenses have all the tape on Stephon Diggs and Josh Allen and the routes that they like to run together and where Stephon likes to be on the field and what certain strengths Stephon has. And then you see other players step up as Stephon takes a different type of role last year and draws a lot of the attention away from other offensive weapons. So you see Gabe Davis step up. You see Dawson Knox step up. Now that there's the tape on them, who's going to be the new guy this year? So I think that's been fun to watch is every year a new player takes on a different role within this offense, and it just adds to the firepower as a whole. I mean, Josh Allen talked about the weapons that this team has, and it seems like every year they just take a step further in the conversation of how many weapons, how much firepower this offense has, and you add O.J. Howard and Jameson Crowder and James Cook to the mix, and it's just like, can we go up from here again after this? Because every year under Sean McDermott, it seems like this offense has kept taking steps forward in different ways, and it's kind of crazy to think about, but I think this year the team, the offense, has the potential to do so based on the pieces that they're looking at right now.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about it for a long time. As scary as this team was playing at the end of last year, when Steve has said many times they timed it out right, you know, they were playing their best football mm-hmm. as they were heading into the playoffs.
And they were healthy.
And they were healthy, part two. On paper, right now, this team could be even better.
It's crazy. Than the game
last year, which is pretty nuts.
Yeah.
We do have to take a break here. Maddie is going to be kind enough to stick around a little bit. So she will hang here with Steve, and we'll be back with more here on One Bills Live, presented by Kalata Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio.
Welcome back to One Bills Live. Steve Tasker along with Maddie Glab. Maddie's going to sit in for the rest of this show for us. We've been talking about we had a brief foray into the Deshaun Watson stuff in Cleveland, Maddie. But as a result of all that yickety, one of the things that's come out of this, Yahoo Sports put out an article, and their speculation is about what's going to happen to Baker Mayfield in Cleveland, right? And not only Baker Mayfield, but also there's a strong sentiment in San Francisco about what's going to happen with Jimmy Garoppolo. So one of the Yahoo sports writers went out and asked some officials around the league, GMs, coaches, all of that stuff, you know, anonymously, I guess, about what their thoughts were about those two. The consensus was interesting to me. They think both these guys are going to be released before the beginning of the season. We don't see Jimmy Garoppolo that much. We don't see him play, but he's a guy who got that team to the Super Bowl. And of course, Baker Mayfield was number one overall pick, who's played well at times, played really hurt last year on a really good roster, and they couldn't get it done. Man, it's amazing though how the fortunes have changed for those two guys and what may happen. And I'd like to know what you think about it, and also where do you think they'll end up? I mean, there's a lot of talk about the Carolina Panthers for Baker, mm-hmm. but what about Garoppolo?
I mean, I think the Panthers does make the most sense for Baker Mayfield. Jimmy G, that's interesting because he is a different type of quarterback in today's NFL. I think Baker fits the build on a younger quarterback and what NFL offenses want to be like more than Jimmy G does. And right. with Jimmy G, he's the type of quarterback where you're going to need a good running back, a good rushing offense to be able to put together, to be able to mesh, mix, whatever you want to call it, with what Jimmy G can do in the air. He's no Josh Allen in what he can do, but he's taken teams far before, right? He's been a successful quarterback in a lot of ways, and I think also people may not look at or give him the type of credit that he deserves with what he's done in his time in the NFL.
It's interesting, though. To say he needs a good running back may be an understatement, because the reason they got to the Super Bowl was because of Kyle Shanahan and the running offense and Jim Harbaugh. Well, it wasn't Jim Harbaugh at the time. It was Mike Shanahan, Kyle Shanahan. So Kyle Shanahan gets them to the Super Bowl, but they had this running first kind of offense, and nobody really does that. Baltimore, you can make a case for, does that, but you know, I'm like you. I'm shocked that Jimmy G's stock is so far down.
I also think, at this point, they're going to be released because teams don't want to pay what they need to pay for these quarterbacks.
They don't want to give up compensation for them.
And you could argue salary cap, blah, blah, blah. I know our team has faced it a little bit and is going to be happy when that number goes up after next season. So I don't think the road for these two is out, or the road is closing or ending anytime soon. I just think both of these guys have been put in interesting situations at this point. I do think their careers will go on. I do think Baker's a little bit different than Jimmy G, because Jimmy G's older than Baker. I still think Baker has a lot left in his NFL career. I think Jimmy Garoppolo maybe has a couple chances left in terms of, okay, when he gets picked up by a team, what's the contract going to look like? If it's a one-year deal, does he have success on that team? If he doesn't, where else does he go? So I think the road is ending sooner, of course, on Jimmy Garoppolo, because he is an older quarterback. But you could look at him then also as somebody who could take a backup quarterback role in a few seasons, you know, 3 or 4 years down the road. But I still think these guys do have something left in the tank. It'll be interesting to see where they land and the type of offenses that are around them, and maybe the quarterback competition that they have to beat out to earn a starting spot. I do think both of them still are starting caliber quarterbacks.
I think both of them, unlike other guys around, like Mahomes and Josh, Rodgers, Brady, maybe a guy like Matt Stafford. There are some of these guys around, maybe Kyler Murray. I think these two guys, Baker Mayfield and Jimmy Garoppolo, I think it is 100% about the situation they get dropped into. I don't think either one of them has the ability to carry a team on their back and raise the level of the whole place. Like, you know, Tom Brady going to Tampa Bay and they win the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
I don't think either one of these guys have that in them to be the difference maker. They're good, not great. And even when they're at their best, they're great for a minute. That's where I see the problem with both these guys. And that's why some team, if you're Carolina, I'm not giving up 2 ones for the first pick of the draft 4 years ago. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm not doing that for Baker Mayfield. I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to do it for Jimmy Garoppolo either. There's other guys out there that can give me what he gives me in their mind. That's the argument that can be made. So I think it's really interesting to think about what these teams, the situation each team has, and you know, obviously when you look around for Carolina, that's a spot where they. If you're Carolina, would you rather have Jimmy G or Baker Mayfield? Which one's the better guy?
I want Baker Mayfield.
Yeah, I think so too. He's younger.
And people could, you know,
He throws it better.
Yes, he throws it better. People could make the argument, you know, I don't want what comes along with Baker Mayfield in his character or the way he's cocky or what he says, blah, blah, blah. I don't think he does enough to have that be a problem on a team. You want a quarterback that is confident, and I think Baker is a very confident individual. And maybe, yeah, says some things that people get annoyed with, but I don't think it's anything to look the other way if he's on the table and available. I think he's a quarterback who can help you in a lot of different ways. I think Baker's a really talented quarterback.
Right.
So that's why I think wherever he goes, he still has a lot left in his tank. I think this is just an interesting situation that he's been placed in. And so have the Browns. The Browns could be without a quarterback come week one. Like,
right. Yeah. That's what needs to be resolved. But both of those guys being quoted, having NFL executives and people at the higher levels of the NFL, both, all of them, kind of the consensus is both these guys are going to get released. Cleveland would love to get some compensation for them, but if nobody's willing to pay anything, there you have it. They're going to get released outright. And really, if they get released, that means a team doesn't have to pay that Baker mm-hmm. Mayfield the $18 million he's guaranteed.
Yeah.
So we'll see.
It'll be interesting. There's a lot of teams that still need quarterbacks or still have a quarterback competition going on. So I think there's several different spots where both of those could land up at, both those players could land at, and could have good careers in good years in 2022. So we'll wait to see as more pieces fall once those guys, if they do, get released and where they end up. But we're going to take a break. We will be right back. Don't go anywhere. Stick with us here. One Bills Live is presented by Kaleida Health. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
Steve Tasker, who has been all over the field.
Kind of unique. He was kind of a dual-role player for you.
Steve!
A balloon.
Steve! A blimp? We're not even in the stratosphere of normalcy.
Welcome back to One Bills Live. It's a Friday afternoon here. Maddie Glab alongside Steve Tasker, filling in for Chris Brown so he could get away for the weekend a little bit quicker than us, but always happy to come fill in. You know, did a segment about mini camp and OTAs and everything that we've seen from the players, the coaching staff, as they've really been around since April. I was thinking back as everybody's gone now. So the halls are quiet once again. They've been loud for like the last month and a half with players and coaches, and they have a much deserved 5-week break before we head to Rochester for training camp, which the schedule was released yesterday. So we know when these guys are starting. We know when they'll be practicing. So we hope to have a lot of people out at some of the open practices there in Rochester. But it seems like the last month has just been so busy for everybody because for OTAs, we could watch practice once a week, and then players and coaches were talking once or twice a week. And so it almost seemed like you got back into like an in-season rhythm for part of the week. And I thought back, I'm like, these guys have been here since April with workouts.
Yeah.
I mean, we end the season late January and they're back like a month and a half later for workouts, and now it's June 17th and everybody is gone as they take a few weeks off before training camp starts at the end of July. And of course, one thing that was thrown into the mix that none of us expected, that was really a bummer and a total Debbie Downer, was the mass shooting in Buffalo. And I don't make light of it and explaining it that way at all. I mean, it was tragic, and it really threw everybody off, as, you know, we all are in our daily schedules and going through the grind Monday through Friday. These guys were in the middle of OTAs when this happened, and it was necessary to take that pause and to not practice for the day, as the players and the coaching staff went down to East Buffalo outside of the Tops and got to volunteer and put together meals for people and talked to people and helped people process what they were going through. And since then, the support on East Buffalo, in East Buffalo, I think has been really cool. And I hope that never stops, because that's a community that needs that help. That's a community that needs more grocery stores. That's a community that needs love and support in a lot of different ways, and will continue to need that as they grapple with and deal with what happened just over a month ago there, a sickening racist attack at a grocery store. That community will never be the same, but that community doesn't need to be defined by that terrible, terrible thing. I think it can be defined on how it comes together, on what happens after something like that took place. Hopefully that community can grow in a lot of different ways, and the support from people on the outside to see how people have donated, have taken the time to come into town to help, has also been really inspiring in different ways. And one of our own players, Deion Dawkins, sat down with some former players to talk about the mass shooting, to talk about what happened. And it aired, I think it was in NFL Films or aired on NFL Network. So we want to show that to you guys right now. So if you're watching on MSG, you guys can enjoy watching it. And if you're listening on the radio, you're still going to get a lot out of it. So here's Deion Dawkins with several former and current Bills players.
7 years ago this week, a white supremacist walked into the Mother Emanuel AME Church, an historic and spiritual landmark for the black community of Charleston, South Carolina. He opened fire, killing 3 men and 6 women. Last month, in Buffalo, New York, this hateful and horrific history repeated itself. A white male wearing military gear entered a supermarket in a predominantly black neighborhood, shooting and killing 10 people, including a security guard. The FBI is calling this a racially motivated attack.
This has to stop. It has to stop. The hate has to stop. We need more love.
So what's up, fellas? We are in the pavilion a couple blocks away from where that tragedy had happened at the Tops on Jefferson. I really want to thank you all for being here. As black men, how are we coping with this Tops shooting?
I lived in a home about 5 blocks from here because it was easy for me. I used to walk to the stadium for practice and for the game on Sundays. So it was very disturbing to me to see this tragedy that happened in my former neighborhood.
Well, for me, I was devastated. Just as Buffalo as a whole, and just people all across the country, for a massacre to occur like this, a evil, evil person committing this heinous act, all because of the color of our skin. That's the part that just infuriates me.
I mean, we're in the 21st century now. To steal words from Martin Luther King, why can't we judge a man by the content of his heart instead of the color of his skin? We can all get along if we can all just manage somehow to find kindness in our hearts to speak to the next guy.
This is a world that is a melting pot of beautiful people in it. And if you can't fit in it, then you need to move. It takes more time to hate someone than to love someone.
When people look at me, not everyone knows that I'm Deion Dawkins until they get to talking to me. And then when they get to talking to me and understanding I'm Deion Dawkins, the left tackle for the Buffalo Bills, then that wall breaks down. So the world, even to this day, still thinks that, oh, because you're a football player, that you don't go through it. But we go through it, and just as much as the regular person walking to the dollar store around the corner.
It kind of happened to me this morning, actually. I stay in a hotel down in West Seneca, and a white family walked out the door, and we said hi to them, but the mom didn't say hi to us. As they were walking to the car, he was walking out. She walks back, and she grabs him by the hand, and she looks at us, and the kid goes, "Mom, look, it's Isaiah McKenzie." And she goes, "Who?" And And I don't know if she was looking at, okay, who are these guys standing here, or because we were black, or, any reason. But when he said that, she was like, who? And then, like, she kind of, like, relaxed. It's like, okay, my son's fine. Like, she let him go.
We've got a lot of work to do, and it starts, obviously, with having this conversation, but we've had these conversations before. You know, the thoughts and the prayers.
Yeah.
No, do something. Common sense gun control. I'm a Second Amendment guy. I believe in having firearms and owning. I would think our founding fathers would have wanted us to use common sense.
By the time the season starts, most of the nation will have moved on. Let's hope not. What work do we still have to do?
Replay. Never let it get out of your mind. Replay the incident. You got to remember what happened.
You know, we've gotten a lot of national media attention for the wrong reasons. But now they've gone. This is where Buffalo steps in. This is where the community steps in.
Let's go, Buffalo!
Let's go, Buffalo!
Let's go, Buffalo!
It is time to pour some resources into this community, into these families that have been, their loved ones have been plucked off of the face of this earth. So, this is an opportunity for us, all the citizens of Buffalo, to pour every ounce of love that we have within us.
A really inspiring roundtable conversation with Deion Dawkins, Isaiah McKenzie, Bruce Smith, several different former and current players. Amazing.
Booker Anderson was there. Yeah, Daryl Talley was a part of that as
DT,
well.
DT, Leonard Smith was in there as well. But so cool to see those guys be willing to talk about something so tough like that. Many of them have also been to East Buffalo since then multiple times. I volunteered with Leonard Smith one morning, getting some food boxes ready to go for people. So there's so many different ways to volunteer. There's so many different ways to give back. There's so many different ways to support that community that is still in need today and is going to be in need after people move on from this tragic incident. Like Deion said or read in that feature story, by the time the season starts, a lot of people will have forgotten about this. And Bruce said, you know, it's time to pour everything we have as people of Buffalo into that community. And that can be something that goes on forever and hopefully is in the back of people's minds for so long. You and I come from a fortunate upbringing. We didn't have to deal with a lot of different things that black people have to deal with when it comes to racial profiling or instances that they're put in because of the color of their skin. And I think the least thing that we can do as somebody who's privileged and who grew up more fortunate in different ways because we didn't get judged by the skin color that we have is to love people and to show support and to help communities in need like East Buffalo. I explained this last time I was on air. I think one thing that I'm trying to do that is so easy and can be an extra $10 if you have that to give every week or every month is when I'm at the grocery store, I'm going to pick up a couple extra things and drop them off at a location that's accepting food because there are so many different locations across the city of Buffalo, whether it's fridges that offer free food to people that you can constantly stock. I think last week I picked up a couple bags of apples, potatoes, and oranges, and I think total it was an extra $30. And if you have something like that, even that can make a small impact in somebody's life. You know, food is important. People need food to live. But the support that community needs today, tomorrow, and next week isn't going to go away because we forget about something like this tragic thing that happened.
And while the East Side and Jefferson Avenue and that was a rallying point, there's tons of stuff, even in you don't have to drive all the way into the city. There's always somebody you can reach out to and help or be a part of their lives or make their day a little better or contribute in some way, shape, or form. I just want to take and kudos to the Snowman, Deion Dawkins, for making that happen, for that roundtable to happen. Mm-hmm. Pull Bruce Smith and Daryl Talley in, Booker Edgerson, who is a fixture here in Buffalo from his time with us in the 60s with the Buffalo Bills. He's the president of the NFL, of the Bills alumni here in Buffalo. Leonard Smith, who's a former teammate of mine, and of course Isaiah McKenzie as well. It's nice to see those guys sit down together and reiterate what we all feel, let's be better because of this.
Mm-hmm.
Let's be better because of it. And I'm glad we took a minute to show that. I don't know that a lot of people have seen it. You're right. I think it did go on NFL Network or thereabouts, but, Deion Dawkins and his round table with Bruce and Booker, Leonard, Isaiah, and Daryl. That was nice.
Yeah, and that's not the only thing Deion has done. He just came out with a Players Tribune article. He's quote tweeted it. I'm sure the Bills have tweeted it. I've retweeted it. But it's titled Buffalo, and it's about the tragic racist attack at that Tops. And he kind of details from his experience what it was like to hear about something like that, what it was like to get into that community and help volunteer, and what he wants for Buffalo going forward. And we did a really cool shoot with Deion Dawkins and with Benny the Butcher, who's an artist who's from Buffalo and has really blown up over the last couple of years. And it's cool to think that he even still has the time of day for the Buffalo Bills. Deion and Benny are really close. Benny grew up in East Buffalo, so the shoot that we did yesterday, and it's going to come out mid-July, is we went to Benny's old house on Montana Avenue where he grew up, and Deion and Benny had some really candid conversations about what it was like to grow up on that side of town, what some of the struggles that Benny faced as a young black boy in the United States of America, and what it was like to grow up in an area that was very segregated, what he wants to see for East Buffalo. They talked about the shooting. They talked about a song that Benny just came out with that details the shooting and his thoughts on it and East Buffalo as a whole. And just a really cool conversation. Deion had some really great things to say too. He admitted sometimes as a player, it's hard to think about or get into other parts of the community because you usually live out by the stadium in Orchard Park, which is a great place to live. Mm-hmm. But you wake up, you go to work, you do your job, you come home, you rest and you relax, and then you get up again and you go to practice and you're doing meetings and you're having games and you're preparing for your next opponent. And so in season, you kind of have the blinders on in a lot of different ways. And that's an okay thing because you have to, because that's what your assignment is. So he admitted, it's hard sometimes to get to know other areas or to pour into different places in the community. And he's done a lot with Rooted for Love, which is an organization here that does a lot with food and helping people get the food that they need. But he said what happened in East Buffalo is just a reminder to pour into different communities throughout Buffalo. So I've just been really proud in what he's been able to do in the voice that he has and the voice that he feels comfortable using. He is an amazing human. It has been so great to get to know somebody like Deion since coming to the Buffalo Bills. So proud of the type of person that he is, the time that he gives back. He is somebody who I could text him. He's not around right now because he's back in Florida. But if he were in Buffalo and I needed something, right, I could say, hey, Deion, we need you for an interview at this time. Can you be there? Sure, Maddie, of course. Or if it's community relations reaching out to him saying, hey, Deion, we have this event for the Boys and Girls Club or whoever. Do you want to be a part of it? It's on Saturday. You're one day off this week. He would say, of course, I would love to be there. And I know we have this conversation a lot about the type of players on this team. But he is one of many guys who are like this on the Buffalo Bills roster. And I feel so blessed to get to interact with these guys. guys almost every single day. And I love showing that to our community and to our fans, because they're so special.
Yeah, it's not just on the field where these guys are successful. They're successful on the field because of the kind of human beings they are. And the team building that they put in here with Sean McDermott and his staff, it's a special place right now. At this point in history, One Bills Drive is pretty special mm-hmm. over here. They got guys like Dion and Josh, Isaiah McKenzie. They've got these guys in here that are pretty special guys. And I think Buffalo, when in this last month when it has needed them most, they have done their best to rise to the occasion. Sean McDermott taking the whole team down mm-hmm. to Jefferson Avenue. The club raising over $1 million through whatever they did in the Choose Love T-shirts and all the other things they did. It's a great effort by them, and it just seems so natural for this group of guys to do that. It doesn't seem like I didn't think they would. It just seems like it makes sense for this group of guys to be those kind of guys, to be the guys that go down there to put out an article on the Player Tribune. And do the round table on the NFL Network. So it's good to be here at One Bills Drive. You got a ton of quality guys here. They're not going to forget about what happened on Jefferson Avenue, and us bringing this to you today again, we'll try and do our part to make sure none of us do. So thank you for that, and thanks to Dion and the group of guys on that round table for doing that for us.
Yeah, definitely. We're going to take a break, but when we come back, we may dip into the mailbag, answer some of the questions that you have for us. So don't go anywhere here on One Bills Live. We're presented by Collider Health. This is Buffalo Bills Radio. We're back here on One Bills Live, and as promised, you guys tweeted in some great questions for us. We appreciate it. So let's get to our Friday fan mailbag. We've got some great questions that we are going to get into.
Yeah, there are some really good ones this week, and some of them are hard to answer.
I know. Some of them are, pick your poison. What do you think? It's hard to have some takes here June 17th.
Right.
We haven't seen too much from some
camp.
Of these new players. In training camp, though, we'll have all the hot takes. All right. So number one is from Rachel. She says, I know it's early, but if you had to guess at this point, do you think Singletary or Cook will get more snaps week one?
Today?
Huh.
I think it's going to be Singletary.
Mm-hmm.
I can see why you might think Cook. But I think the way they've done things in the past, there's every chance. Cook has a tremendous camp and does all that. I mean, we've seen like AJ Epenesa and Boogie Basham be healthy scratches
mm-hmm.
on their first day of their rookie season, first game of the rookie season.
Yeah.
I don't think that'll happen to James Cook, but yeah, I think they'll probably stick with the experienced guy and let Singletary take most of the snaps.
I would say Singletary as well. Snaps is a interesting word there, because are you talking about snaps at a running back position or running
the
football
yeah.
on the field,
yeah,
catching passes, be on the field? I'll still go with Singletary there, but I do think James Cook plays a role in this offense from week one, from day one of the 2022 season. I think they drafted him because of that. I think they drafted him because if you turn on the tape from what he did at Georgia, he's a very versatile player who, like I said a couple segments ago, is a piece to take this offense to the next level, which is absolutely crazy to think about the fact that this offense could take another step forward this season. I mean, they've been taking steps forward the last 3 years, make it four, because you have players like James Cook, O.J. Howard, Jamison Crowder on your offense, who you can play the mismatch game all you want with different bodies like this, because for some defenses, they may not have somebody to line up against James Cook, depending on what he's doing.
Yeah, it's a matchup league, so we'll see. It's going to be interesting to find out that you think with Knox and maybe O.J. Howard, two tight ends, Singletary and James Cook with different skill sets. You've got wide receivers.
You run some 22 personnel out there.
Right, or you could run or you could run like 0-1, like one personnel, right? Like no running backs, one tight end, you know, that kind of thing. So it goes all the way from five wide to three tights and two backs. It's going to be a lot of fun to see what Ken Dorsey does with the personnel and the groupings that he has at his disposal and what those might be and how they play in them. I can't wait for the regular season, I mean the preseason, so we can start to get at least a little bit of an idea.
The word positionless defensive players exist because of offenses like the Buffalo Bills. You have to throw different defenses at offenses like this because it just doesn't match up like corner to wide receiver or safety to what's going to happen in the back end.
You're
going to
get positionless offensive players, a guy that can play tight end / fullback / running back / wide receiver. That's hard to do, particularly with size involved. But, you know, that's what you're kind of trying to find people to do. You got the fullback / tight end, the H-back kind of thing. That's kind of common. Running back / wide receiver. But you don't really have wide receiver / running back. You've got tight end / receiver, and sometimes they'll move back. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So they're either one or the other. Like Gesicki down in Miami, he's a kind of a wide receiver who just he's technically a tight end. But, you know, so that's where they're headed, is getting somebody, an offensive player who can play all over the place, and you can actually hand him the ball or throw him the football. Mm-hmm. But when you get a guy like that, and then if you can figure out a way that he can run block and pass block or pass protect,
good night.
That's still a unicorn I haven't seen.
We'll see if James Cook can do some of that this season. I think he definitely will have the opportunity to. All right, number two from Nick. Can we try to incorporate some more quick passes, just a three-step drop and throw? We did some wide receiver screens last year, but everything else seemed to be routes of 10 or more yards down the field. Why not mix things up with some quick 7-yard slants or quick out routes? What's your take
interesting.
On that?
Brownie and I, we've had this conversation before about the fact that Josh has always been, and maybe this is a function of the routes that he's talking about, Josh has always been kind of a put-the-ball-on-the-guy kind of quarterback, where you see Cole Beasley standing there, turn around on the dead part of the defense, just turns around, Josh sticks it right on him. Certainly he hits Steph Diggs on the run a few times, and he did that a lot when Isaiah McKenzie was in the game. He hits Gabe Davis running down the football field like that. But I get that, too. I don't know. If there was a reason to only use quick routes, and I couldn't think of what it was, rather than having guys drop, you know, having the quarterback drop back five steps and give him the chance to get down the field and stretch the defense. I know that run after catch was something the Bills were not very good at a year ago. Maybe if they wanted to improve that, or if they thought they would get some benefit from it, they would probably do that, a three-step and hit the guy on a slant where he could – outrun some people to the corner or across the formation. It's not so much the quick game, but there's some others here down further down, but the screen game is one I'd like to see him get back to as well. And I think, you know, James Cook's perfect for that. But then again, you know, you got to have guys that can run it, offensive linemen that can run it.
Mm-hmm.
And if, you know, I'm not saying they couldn't in the past, but they didn't, I don't know what the reason was why they didn't.
There was one.
But they didn't.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, to do screens, to do quick slants, what you need is and for any type of offense, I mean, you need it working in unison, but for something that's going to happen not too far away from the offensive line, you need the offensive line to do a good job blocking for you. We know that the offensive line flipped and turned and twisted in a lot of ways last year because of injuries and because of COVID. We'll see what happens this year. Every year I'm like, maybe we'll finally have an offensive line where we see five of the same players on the field for the entire season. Maybe not. They brought in some great veterans this offseason to fight for a spot on the starting five. And I'm sure, yes, we have a new offensive line coach in Aaron Cromer, but I'm sure it's going to be the same thing of we're going to mix and match these guys until week one is here. We're not going to name a starting five because we want to see what different rotations we have, what different guys work together in case somebody gets hurt. Screenplays, I'm all for more screenplays. I would love to see them work that into the offense a little bit more in 2022 because I agree. Last year, I mean, you're playing armchair offensive coordinator and you're like, maybe some screenplays would have helped us get a couple more yards, move the ball downfield.
It's a couple of things. One thing it does, it takes the starch out of a pass rush when they think, oh, wait, they might just throw this right behind us. It also gives your running back some space and your offensive lineman a chance to get out in front. And it's an easy completion if you get rid of it. All of that stuff happens, and it gives you a chance for a running back to take an easy completion the distance. You know, you get those guys out in front. It's hard, though, too, when you got a – maybe it's harder when you got a quarterback like Josh. I haven't already thought about this, but maybe it's harder with a quarterback like Josh when the defense thinks, well, he doesn't throw him because he is the screen pass. He'll just tuck it under his arm and take off.
Yeah.
So they rush guys like Josh, like Pat Mahomes, like Kyler Murray, Lamar Jackson. They rush those guys a little bit differently because they kind of try and stay in their lanes – instead of doing all the stunts and picks and moves up and the X maneuvers up front, because if they leave a gap, he'll take off and snap off a 19-yard run.
Yeah.
So is that where a defense views your offense as one that doesn't run screens because you got a quarterback that's too good to throw it or is too good to, you know, to get hemmed in by a pass rush. And if guys start coming through on Josh fast – he just outruns them. So the screens, for some reason, there's a different view of a screen pass for the Buffalo Bills, both on the offensive side and on the defensive side when you're defending them, because you know you got this quarterback that runs, and I'm not going to let him do that. So when you're not letting him run, you're also taking away the enticement there is to run a screen because the pass rush is not getting the penetration.
That's true.
I mean,
That's a good point.
I'm kind of thinking on my feet there, but maybe that's it.
Makes a little sense.
Maybe, yeah,
sense.
A little. I don't know if it's true or not, though. It's just kind of conjecture on my part, but there's got to be a reason. Because, you know, the Chiefs, they'll throw some, but they do the shovel passes and that kind of stuff.
Yeah,
more so.
Hmm.
Maybe. Maybe screen passes have come and gone in the NFL. I don't know.
I think it's still a nice little mix to have in there to throw off what you're doing.
Maybe that's something has something to do with it, with the fact that you got running quarterbacks in the league and the pass rush is relegated to staying in their lanes a little bit.
All right, we'll do another one. Circling the Wagons asks, which player could take a step up in 2022 that will make the most impact on offense or defense? This is kind of in the middle of the questions that we asked. We answered a couple of those in the last answer, so we'll move on to this one. So is there a player that you think could take a step up in 2022 that's going to have the most impact on offense or defense? So you're taking a step up, but you're also having the biggest impact, which is
take a step up, biggest impact. Yeah, if it's a new player, it's like Jamison Crowder. That he's got a chance to do something like that. OJ Howard as well, of course. James Cook, new player. These are all new players. Players that were on the roster a year ago. I think the obvious answer is Gabe Davis. The last time we saw him was the 4-touchdown game that he's already sick of hearing about. But it also gives you an idea that he has been a productive member of this offense since literally his first day as a pro. His rookie season, he caught the first pass that was thrown by the team in that year, and he has not let up since. He's been a big part of what they do. So he's a good candidate for being one of those guys that will be a contributor and take a big step up. He should get a lot more snaps this year than he did a year ago, and that could be all it takes.
Yeah, he definitely should. Somebody that I'm excited to see in this offense, not necessarily the most exciting position, but I think Roger Saffold will be a piece to this offensive line, possibly. Again, I said that they brought in several veterans, so how does it shake out when you're looking at the starting five in week one? I think Roger Saffold could be part of the mix there. James Cook, we've talked about him already. I think he could be somebody who plays an important role in this offense this season. You already mentioned O.J. Howard. I mean, Khalil Shakir, I think, is going to play an interesting role on this offense. Watching him has been fun. He was out for a little bit, but he had a role in mandatory minicamp, and I mean, I think he possesses something that is unique to the wide receiver position. And if you look at his numbers in college, and if you look at some of the stats that are out there by PFF, and you think back to Brandon Bean talking about how he was sticking out on their board, I think guys who stick out on their board are guys who are going to make an impact on this team, and guys who they view higher because of what they've seen, of course, compared to other NFL teams. So I think he could be like a little gem in the rough there that people aren't expecting, other teams maybe, that he could grow into something this year, next year. I do think he's going to play a role in some way. Defense, I'm looking for Greg Rousseau and A.J. Epenesa to take that next step. I mean, we've heard Sean McDermott and Leslie Frazier say it is time. There should be no more lulls for them. The consistency needs to be there. They both had good games last year, but they had bad games last year as well, and we need that consistency from our younger offensive linemen. What can Tim Settle do on the defensive line? He's going to be a part of the rotation. Of course, Von Miller is going to have a huge role. I'm excited to see what Kaiir has. It's been fun to watch him already. He's had some flashes here and there, but so has Dane Jackson also. That's going to be an incredible competition when it comes to training camp. And for Kaiir, one thing that we've heard, and of course, you're not going to see as much from him right now because he is that type of press corner, and guys aren't bumping and popping yet. So
it's not legal yet.
Yeah, you really can't see those types of strengths that Kaiir Elam possesses in his game.
You know, the one guy that we've kind of glossed over, we talked about him earlier like this was going to be the case, and then when we got that question specifically, we didn't – Isaiah McKenzie. His role he's been said, I'm going to have a bigger role on this team in this offense. That speaks to a guy having a breakout year. Maybe he does. It'll be really interesting to see that happen. If they go – and think about it. If they go four wide at any point, Isaiah McKenzie's going to be on the field with Jamison Crowder, Steph Diggs, and Gabe Davis. That's four pretty good guys.
Yeah.
Pretty productive guys. So even Isaiah McKenzie could be a person that you're like, wow, where'd he come from? Why was he – you know, that kind of thing. So there's all kinds of possibilities. You know, Daquan Jones as well down inside with Tim Settle.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, Jordan Phillips. And
I had this happen to me.
The list goes on.
Maddie, so here, let me say this is the truth. It still happens to me. You said, oh, yeah, you said Von Miller. I was like, oh, my gosh.
He's on the roster. I totally forgot.
I totally forgot. I had a buddy of mine want me to get him a jersey, you know, go over to the store. While I'm over here, go get him a jersey. So I went over. He goes, I want one of my buddies wants a Milano jersey, and I want a Miller jersey. And I was a Miller jersey. Miller?
Who's Miller?
Who's Miller? I go, oh, gee, Von. I forgot. I forgot Von Miller. It's amazing to me that the guy is now a Buffalo Bill.
Kind of still feel like
watch him play. You know, he's just lurking around.
I mean, he's learning the offense right now. It's kind of weird to think about a 12-year vet having to learn learning the defense, having to learn a new defense right now. But he's going to pick it up because he's an incredible player. And so I think it's been fun to watch him on the field as he's helping these young guys, but also doing the same thing and probably asking them some questions as well to get stuff down.
I wonder if everybody, like, it's so unbelievable he's on the team. Do they, like, just say, okay, he's going to be good, we're going to leave? Because all this other stuff we've been talking, all this whole list of names we've been going down, like who's going to have a breakout year. He wasn't on. He's going to make the difference,
right? He better be on top of the list.
He should be the top guy on the list.
Yeah.
It's I can't believe I just glossed. I do it constantly.
Newsflash, Von Miller is on our team.
Believe Von Miller is on the roster.
All right, we got to take a break. When we come back, we're going to close up shop here. One Bills Live is presented by Clyde Health. This is Buffalo Bills Radio. All right, we're back here on One Bills Live, closing out the show for the weekend.
Yeah, before we go, though, we got to everybody congratulate Maddie. When she comes back, she's going to be gone for a couple of weeks, and she's got to go.
Getting
and,
out of here.
She's got one of those trivial things going on. I think she's getting married. Congratulations, everybody. Maddie Glab's getting married. She'll come back with a, well, a different ring on her finger, an extra ring. Congratulations, Maddie. We're all happy for you. It's going to be great. I know it's a destination wedding. You got all your friends and family heading showing up
down
there. That's
going
to be awesome.
Yeah, we've got just over 100 people coming to our wedding in Mexico, and then we'll be honeymooning in Greece and Italy.
Greece and Italy.
Yeah.
Awesome.
You know Italy well.
Yes. I love Italy. You'll love it. You will absolutely love it. Congratulations, Maddie. And we all love you, and we can't wait to see you back here safe and sound.
Yep. When I'm back, it'll be about training camp time. So you guys enjoy a couple weeks off, too. Everybody have a good weekend, and we'll be right back here on Monday on One Bills Live. See you later, guys.